The Human Adventure. As a regular feature in its series of year-round broadcasts in the public interest, the Columbia Broadcasting System, in collaboration with the University of Chicago, presents the 35th dramatic chapter of The Human Adventure.
The story of a dictator and his attempt to cross the English Channel and conquer the British Isles.
A man who wanted to carry the Imperial Eagle to the Tower of London.
The story of a blitzkrieg, exciting as tomorrow's headline.
Another chapter in The Human Adventure.
This series of broadcasts represents the work of universities. The Human Adventure presents to you the exclusive accounts of research in all fields of science and scholarship. A university's job is to learn the nature of things that you and all mankind may benefit from its knowledge. So that this knowledge may reach all America, the Columbia Broadcasting System presents this series over a coast-to-coast network.
I was born the 15th of August, 1769, at the Ajaccio on the island of Corsica. I was called Napoleon. That, for centuries past, has been the name given to the second son in our family. Although I started life as a second son of a poor Corsican, I eventually did quite well. I became Emperor of France and almost conquered the world. And then I struck upon a plan to invade the British Isles by crossing the English Channel with my good army. I hear that even today, after 135 years, there is a fellow who is trying to steal my thunder. But even I, Napoleon, made a grievous error. I had a tendency to exaggerate. I thought the Channel was merely a ditch.
This is the story of Napoleon Bonaparte and his plan to invade England. A story told to you almost entirely in Napoleon's own words. Words from his letters, his memoirs, his orders to his admirals and his army. What was this plan? What significance has it today? Was it a sham merely to deceive Europe while Napoleon prepared for his march to the east? Or was it a genuine attempt of a dictator who said,
"If we are master of the sea for 3 days, we will ring the knell of England."
To answer these questions, we turn first to Professor Harold C. Deutsch of the University of Minnesota, who a few years ago re-examined the evidence with great care and concluded,
"Probably no phase of the history of the Napoleonic era has been viewed from so many different angles as Napoleon's project for an invasion of England. There's a mass of evidence upon which historians have endeavored to maintain or reject the reality of his invasion. But the ingenuity and the vastness of conception which characterizes the evolution of the great project are the best arguments proving the sincerity of Napoleon's intention."
"Let us be masters of the Channel for 6 hours, and we will be masters of the world." My plan to invade England by way of the choppy Channel was known by many, and many brought me grand schemes. My first problem, how to leap the ditch. One fellow suggested attack by air. How, I asked. "By bombardment with balloons," he answered. I sighed, told him he was a madman, and threw him out. "Don't laugh. That was in 1800. The following year, in September, a young American, Robert Fulton, inventor of the steamboat, came to me with an even more amazing invention."
"Premier Consul, bear with me a moment. I have perfected a boat that will deliver France and the world from British oppression."
"I merely seek a boat that will cross the Channel and carry the Eagle of France to the Tower of London."
"It will do more than that. that will destroy the British fleet and establish freedom of the seas. It will end naval warfare by making it too terrible to contemplate.
It's an amazing craft to do all that single-handed. Does it fly on wings?
No, but it navigates under the sea.
You are mad, or you are a genius, or you are a liar.
Sire, perhaps I should offer it to the English Admiralty. They are less insulting.
But not as imaginative. Tell me, what is your invention?
It is a plunging boat that can sink under the water to a depth of 30 feet and remain submerged for 45 minutes with a crew of 3 men.
In detail, please. How does the crew breathe underwater?
A few jars of oxygen are provided and lime to neutralize the odor of bad air.
But how does this monster establish freedom of the seas?
Simply by maneuvering under the water unseen, approaching a British vessel and discharging a cask of gunpowder under the enemy boat. I have succeeded in blowing up a small boat in the harbor of Brest.
Monsieur Fulton, tell me, what do you call your undersea boat?
The Nautilus.
And how much do you want for it?
28,000 francs.
If I give you 28,000 francs, will you please give your Nautilus to the British with my compliments?
The preceding scene is reconstructed from letters written by Robert Fulton and the Minister of Marine of the French Republic to Napoleon. They have recently been discovered by Holden Ferber of Harvard University and translated for the first time into English for The Human Adventure.
And Mr. Fulton did go to England to sell them his strange undersea dog, calling me a wild beast that ought to be hunted down. But if I was to proceed with my plan to invade the British Isles, I must rid myself of all these fantastic visionaries and be more practical. I sought an opportunity to declare war on England. Such was afforded when Britain violated the Treaty of Amiens. She refused to evacuate Malta as agreed. On March 13th, I held a diplomatic reception at Madame Bonaparte at the Tuileries and invited the British ambassador.
Citizens of the one and indivisible Republic, Napoleon Bonaparte, First Consul and wife.
Walk with me, Josephine. Good evening, Talleyrand. The Englishman here?
Good evening, Bonaparte. The ambassador is at the end of the hall. Oh, you look charming tonight, madam.
Thank you.
Excuse us, Talleyrand. Come with me, Josephine. I see my guest.
Who, dear?
Lord Whitworth. Hello, President France, with war, if we insist.
He looks quite the ladies' man. How the women do flock about him.
They'll soon be surrounded by a fleet.
Coming our way. And with the ladies.
Get rid of them.
That will not be difficult. I will show them my jewels.
And your debts.
Yes, indeed. A charming ball. Charming.
Good evening, Lord Whitworth. Are you enjoying Paris?
Pleasure, Premier First Consul. Ah, Madame Bonaparte, my visit to France is complete. I can now tell my people I have seen the most beautiful woman in Paris.
Oh, flatterer. You tell that to all of us. All in the line of duty, eh, Ambassador?
Goodwill to her. I shall win the heart of France through the hearts of their women.
Oh, tell us, Premier First Consul, who, in your opinion, is the greatest woman of France?
The one who has the most children.
Oh. We leave you to flatter Bonaparte, Monsieur Whitworth. Come, ladies, you must see my new wardrobe.
Oh, you are a fortunate woman, Josephine. If I only had the Bank of France for a husband.
Come, the reign of chatter is over.
You, too, are looking well, Premier.
I would look better if England did not molest us, though.
England wants only peace in Europe. You should be content. France controls Holland, Belgium, and the Italian states.
France is only growing up. She needs colonies.
But, my dear...
Have you any news from England?
No. What news?
What does England intend to do?
I don't understand.
So it's war you want?
No, Premier Consul. We're too sensible to the advantages of peace.
France has the insults of 6 centuries to avenge. We have been at war for 15 years.
That is already too long.
But you want to continue for another 15. You forced me to it.
That is far from His Majesty's intention.
Oh, what nonsense! The English want war. They are the first to draw the sword.
I shall be the last to sheet it. They don't observe treaties. We shall have to veil those treaties in black crape.
We have broken no treaties.
Then why all these armaments? Against whom these measures of precaution? If you arm, I too will arm.
Your privilege.
If you want to fight, I too will fight. France can be destroyed, but never intimidated.
You wish to do neither one nor the other.
Then you must respect treaties. Woe betide those who do not keep their treaties. They will be held responsible by all of Europe.
But, Premier Consul, it is you.
Ah! I had rather talk to soldiers than to lawyers. Which one? Someday I will smash your monarchy as I... as I smash this tray of glasses.
But Napoleon was not yet ready for war with Britain. 3 years must pass. First, he must become Emperor of France. Then he must take care of the enemies at his back. He wrote to Talleyrand, "I wish that the troops of the House of Austria retire into Bohemia and Hungary, and I be permitted to make a war upon England without being disturbed. Show Austria that she need not be alarmed by our sentiments. This will flatter her, and it will mean 3 or 4 months before we have to fight with Austria." In the light of subsequent events, we may ask, why did he give the Austrians time to prepare and allow the Russians to come within striking distance? Whether or not this was a tactical error, Professor Deutsch concludes that Napoleon would not have made it had his intention to invade England been a mere gesture. In July 1805, the Emperor Napoleon prepared to strike. He called in his admiral, Villeneuve.
I will be with my troops at Bologna. Across the channel from England. I would have 1,000 gunboats and flatboats to carry 100,000 men and 10,000 horses across the channel into England.
It would be dangerous, sire, for flatboats to cross the tide-swept channel. Flat-bottomed boats may be useful in shallow water, where British cruisers cannot sail and therefore not be able to attack you. But in mid-channel, away from coast defenses, the waves are choppy, and if you have boats without keels, they will rock and your guns will be useless.
I don't intend to fight the British fleet. I know better than that. That is why I called you in. I have a plan to divert the British fleet from the channel.
How, may I ask?
You are to take your squadron to the West Indies. The British Admiral Nelson will follow to engage you. And before he can return, I will cross the channel at Bologna with my troops. Our Toulon Rochefort squadrons will proceed to Bologna to convoy my flotilla after you decoy Nelson.
Excellent, sire. I will inform you by semaphore as to the position of Nelson's fleet so that you may cross safely.
Good. Think over carefully the great enterprise you are about to carry out. But hasten your departure by every possible means. Let nothing delay you. Don't forget that the world was made in 6 days. You can ask me for anything you like, except time. While I waited for word from my admiral, I was with my army on the rocky shore of Bologna, ready to strike across the channel. I had around me 120,000 men, 3,000 cutters and gunboats. We were only waiting for a favorable breeze to carry the Imperial Eagle to the Tower of London. Then came a dispatch from my minister, Talleyrand.
Daru! Daru!
Yes, Your Majesty.
Any word from Admiral Villeneuve?
Not as yet, sir.
Talleyrand writes that a coalition between Austria and Russia is forming. British diplomats are gaining allies on the continent, waiting to strike at France. We must hurry.
Our men are ready to cross the channel.
Yes. We must settle with England, and then we will march east. I have spared the House of Austria too long. I shall pay her a visit with 200,000 men, which you will not soon forget. Send a message by semaphore to Villeneuve.
Where to?
To Brest. Probably back from the West Indies by now.
It will take 3 or 4 hours by semaphore signal, sire.
We've not a moment to lose. Hurry, right. To Admiral Villeneuve. Nelson has probably gone to the Mediterranean or America. Start. Lose not a minute. With my combined fleet, sail up the channel. England is ours. We are all ready to embark. Appear here for 24 hours, and all is over. Signed, Napoleon. Hold that now.
Minister of the Navy,
Decorate. Sign. Good evening, Minister.
Your Majesty, permit me to inform
what
you...
What is it, Dick Grace? Speak up.
Your Majesty, we are informed that Admiral Villeneuve has withdrawn.
Villeneuve had withdrawn. For hours into the night, the Minister of Marine, Decres, attempted to convince Napoleon that Villeneuve's retreat was justified. Napoleon flared up in anger.
Villeneuve is incompetent to command even a frigate. He's a man without resolution or moral courage.
He merely lost his head.
He had no head to lose. Where did he run off to?
To Cadiz.
The coward.
He was not experienced in your type of warfare, and besides, he was met with a British fleet in the fog.
Nonsense! Why do you defend him? Were you familiar with his plan of retreat?
I protest.
My pardon. It was my mistake to appoint a coward unworthy of being a French citizen. Where is Nelson's fleet?
We do not know.
And Villeneuve? In Cadiz, 1,000 miles away from the channel. Not an admiral. What sacrifices for nothing?
The invasion of England is impossible now.
Impossible is a word only in the dictionary of fools. Villeneuve may yet return in time. It's our only chance. In warfare, every opportunity must be seized. For fortune is a woman. You miss her today, you need not expect to find her tomorrow. Order the troops to be ready to sail for England.
The 22nd of August, 1805. Then followed the most critical hours in Napoleon's plan to invade England. On the cliffs of Boulogne, Napoleon reviewed a line of soldiery 9 miles long. He wrote that the sight aroused his hopes for a sure victory. If only Villeneuve, he said, would return. While waiting, he addressed his soldiers.
Soldiers! Afront! We have the insult of 6 centuries to avenge! I know you feel deeply the misfortune that threaten our country, but it does not run any real danger. We will conquer the British. Death is nothing, but to live defeated and ingloriously is to die every day. Fight gloriously to defend liberty, and let us swear eternal war on the enemies of freedom.
For the interruption, Minister Duclef seeks an audience immediately. Here, it's a matter of the utmost urgency.
Your Excellency.
What is it, Decrey?
I regret to inform you...
Spitzer, what is it? Speak! I'm addressing my troops, can't you see?
Your Excellency, the few ships you sent over have turned back.
What?
The admirals claim the English fleet in the channel.
Claim? Have they seen it?
Well, no, but somehow they feel it is there.
They feel? Nonsense. Tell them to prepare to embark again. Villeneuve will soon arrive to convoy the flatboats with troops.
No, Your Excellency. I received word by special courier that Villeneuve is bottled up in Cadiz. He cannot possibly arrive.
Then we will go without him. My army does not fear a phantom English fleet.
Soldiers of France! We are ready to embark! He who fears death is unworthy of being a French citizen! Soldiers! We must finish this campaign with a thunderbolt that will shatter the pride of our enemies! We must, when we have completed all that is necessary for the liberation!
Decrees. What is that, Tanner?
It comes from the channel.
Through your glasses. What is it? Another phantom?
No, not this time. Look for yourself. Here, take the glasses, sir.
I don't need glasses. It is not the first time I have heard the guns of the British fleet.
Soldiers! We turn our eyes away from the shores of England! enemies. Austria and Russia threaten us. I have just received word that they have drawn the sword against us. But we shall break it. Tomorrow, we will come back to finish the British. But today, we march on Austria and then Russia. Today, we march to the east.
And he marched to the east, and Napoleon conquered Austria with ease. But in Russia, he met tragic defeat. Finally exiled at St. Helena, he wrote of his abandoned plan to cross the English Channel. It is March 3rd, 1816. Napoleon's own words.
I frightened them pretty well with my invasion of England, didn't I? What was the public talk about it at the time? Well, they may have joked about it in Paris, but it was no laughing in London. Never was the English oligarchy in greater peril. I had made a landing possible. I had the finest army that ever existed. And in 4 days, I could have reached London. I would not have entered as a conqueror, but as a liberator. The obstacles before which I failed did not proceed from men, but from the elements. In the south, it was the sea destroyed me. And in the north, was the fire of Moscow and the ice of winter. So there it is. Water, air, fire. All nature, and nothing but nature. These were the opponents. Problems of nature are insoluble.
One of America's greatest scholars of Napoleonic history, Professor Jeffrey Bruhn of New York University, author of Europe and French Imperium, concludes the story of a dictator's attempt to cross the English Channel. Professor Bruhn says,
Napoleon, who hated to acknowledge failure, denied later that he had ever intended to invade England at all. He claimed that the camp at Boulogne had been a device whereby he could train and equip an army for use of the overthrow of Austria without alarming the Austrians in advance. However, most leading historians conclude entirely serious, but that Napoleon had underestimated the difficulties. Now, what fate might have held in store for the Grand Army had it ever embarked must remain one of history's question marks.
Universities are places of research, storehouses of knowledge. They investigate the cause of disease that you may have better health. They study problems of economic production that you may have a more secure life. They analyze human experience in past times that you may comprehend the present and be better fitted to meet the future. The universities represent your investment in a better life. You are the beneficiaries in the human adventure.
Next week, the human adventure will tell you about
hay fever.
Hay fever, a chapter in the story of allergy. So that all Americans may keep abreast of contemporary university research, The Human Adventure is brought to you each week by Columbia. Scripts for The Human Adventure are prepared and written by the University of Chicago, and the production is directed by the staff of the Columbia Broadcasting System.